You're listening to Trade Entrepreneur, the show for business owners by business owners. I'm your host, David Sudworth, and welcome to this week's show. Thank you for joining me on this edition of Trade Entrepreneur. I know it's been a while. I've been exceedingly busy with one thing or another, and I wanted to wait for a while until I did a podcast, until we had a guest in the studio, and I'm pleased to say for this episode we do. It's Josh Firkins of H. Firkins & Son Chimney Sweep. I've been meaning to get Josh on the show for pretty much since the day I started this podcast, to be honest. But Josh is at one end of the country and I'm at the other end of the country, and trying to get us both together in the same room is difficult, but we've managed it. For those of you who don't know, Josh has been a sweep for 18 years. He's a sixth generation chimney sweep because H. Firkins & Son started way back in 1860, which is 163 years ago now. So a long and rich tradition in the chimney sweeping industry, and Josh himself has taken a lead in the NVQ for sweeping and latterly training. So Josh, it's great to have you here. The one thing I've always wondered, because it's not something that something that I've had to deal with, when you have a family that's been in the business for so long, is there a pressure on you really to go into that kind of business?
No.
Really?
No, there was no expectation, I don't think.
Right, okay.
I just probably still am one of those people that doesn't really know what they want to do for a job. And so I got to 17, I got a driving license. I was at sixth form and I wasn't really enjoying it particularly much. So I went to work with my dad in the summer holidays and then just didn't stop. And that was in 2005. And now I'm still trying to figure out what I want to do as a job or a career. and I ended up in Blackpool and then here for an interview.
Yeah, I mean, it's something that you hear quite a while, that people do, they kind of fall into this profession. It's not one that they tend to, very few people tend to want to go into it straight off the bat. There's usually a reason that they fell into it one way or another. I guess for you, maybe it's probably just the obvious thing to do because it's just something that was in the family, in your blood.
Well, I don't think it's the sort of thing people tend to go and talk to their careers officer about. I think maybe you think about that later on. I don't think anyone ever plans on it. It just, to some people, eventually seems like a good idea, and to some people it comes a bit earlier. But no, it was really because in those summer holidays, I started getting paid £250 a week, and I thought that was an awful lot of money. And when you're 17, and you feel like you've got a lot of money, you kind of want to carry on what you're doing. And really, I'd say I didn't really take it. I didn't really take it seriously for quite a while. Like it was just a job, and you just were trying to earn money. And then I just started to enjoy it more after probably 5 years. Mm-hmm. And then I think once you start to enjoy something a bit more, you take it seriously in a different way.
Yeah. What do you enjoy about the job?
I don't really know. It's not something in particular I enjoy, I don't think. It's just, like, I think some people have a feeling that they go to bed and they're kind of dreading the morning. They don't want to go to work. And I can't say I wake up and think, yeah, I'm going to go to work, I'm really excited. But I never worry. Like, there's nothing, I don't have a worry. I don't start work and think, I hope this doesn't happen. I hope I don't come across this sort of person. I hope I don't come across this sort of job. Like, you get to a certain point and everything about the job, more or less, kind of just feels easy and straightforward and natural. And it's really just that, I think, the fact that I don't really have to try hard. I don't have to worry. And I think, like, I like not having to have to worry about it, really, I think. And I am pretty confident there's nothing else. I mean, I know there's nothing else I'm very good at. I don't think there's anything else that I'd be able to do where I could just wake up and, no, I'm going to do it, and no, I'm going to get to the end of the day, and everything's going to be all right. And I think it's just that, really.
Do you think that's probably because it's something that you've grown up around, that that you have that confidence in it?
Maybe. I mean, I didn't really know anything about it until I started. I did go out with my dad on like Saturdays, I guess.
And your dad's still sweeping now, isn't he?
Yeah, he is. Yeah. I went out on Saturdays, I guess the odd day in school holidays from probably about the age of 12, maybe 13. But you don't really, I wasn't taking anything in really. Like you just know that you're carrying stuff around. But I guess you pick some stuff up without realizing. But I guess some of it is that, I was never in a position where I didn't have someone to help me. And I'm still not really. So like generally if you're working for yourself, and you've taken like one of the modern training routes, like training courses and things, you don't really have the opportunity to ring someone because you've got a problem. And then half an hour later you're at another house and you've got another problem, you ring them again. And then you might be somewhere else a couple of hours later and you ring them again. Like no one really gets that. So I think that kind of in itself would give you some sort of confidence because you know that if it does hit the fan, actually, like there's someone to come and bail you out, which you kind of might see as like a negative thing really, but like I don't think that is a negative thing. There were lots of situations where I couldn't do a job and I'd make a phone call and then things would get shuffled around and then someone would come and save me. And like that kind of, that's kind of some, there's sort of a comfort in that, I guess.
Is that I guess in a way it's like an informal apprenticeship that you had in a sense, because it was something which you were able to glean information off others and have on hand advice, which isn't the traditional way that, well, it's not the way that most sweeps these days start out. They'll start out with a training course and then they'll go out by themselves. So they won't have the benefit of that. Do you think it's a shame that more sweeps don't have the opportunities that you had?
It's a shame for them. I guess. I mean, it's just not going to happen, is it? It would be much better if people could train that way. And I guess it was some sort of, in a way, like a formal informal apprenticeship. It was like you start with watching and then you move on to, or watching and carrying, and you move on to doing a bit. And you kind of, you don't necessarily even ask that many questions. You just like kind of hear conversations and people, customers are asking questions. And then you kind of pick up on the answers to the questions. And that kind of gives you enough information to be able to piece other stuff together. So if you know like little bits about lots of things, that kind of gives you like this kind of just this way of figuring things out. Like it just, you don't necessarily know the answer to a question, but you know a few about related things, and that kind of gives you enough to kind of figure it out for yourself. That's what I found anyway.
Because you are now heavily involved with delivering training for the Association of Professional Independent Chimney Sweeps, APIX, and also you do your own chimney training as well to experienced sweeps. Do you think the way into the industry for a newbie is satisfactory at the moment?
No, not really. That's kind of why I got involved, because my natural position is that I don't like any of the training in its current form really. I don't think any of it's good enough, and I don't think there's any possibility of it being much better than it is, because like the bar is set quite low. And I don't necessarily mean that in a derogatory way, but it's like almost in terms of cost. So if there's a perceived value in something like in this case training, it's difficult to sort of exceed that unless people that want to be trained can see a real value in it and like a kind of a benefit. So if you're going to offer someone better training that entails more time in classrooms, more time on site training, like just a broader sort of more holistic experience, you you're going to have to invest a lot more money in that. And when you can get what if you're told you can achieve this sort of position of being a competent chimney sweep in like a 4-day course or a 3-day course or a 2-day course or a 1-day course or eight or whatever it is, if that's a possibility for a certain amount of money, if there's someone that thinks you're going to be more competent or better at your job if you double that investment or triple that investment, but double or treble or quadruple the amount of information you get and how well you retain it, I don't think people are going to see much value in that because they don't really need it. If there's an alternative, which is just, this is really easy, this is really cheap, how many people are going to want to spend more money for something that, as far as they're concerned or as far as they're told, is the end result is going to be the same? I don't think there'd be a market for that.
Because the missing ingredient is the experience.
Yeah, like you need experience doing it. I don't think you need experience in like a sterile environment. I remember when I did a NACS course in 2005, 2006, something like that. And I mean, it was semi enjoyable. As far as I remember, I mean, it was a bit of an uncomfortable situation because I was young. I was like 17, maybe 18, depending on if it was 2005, 2006. So I kind of taken quite a long trip up to Stoke or Stone, wherever it is, on my own. And so, but it was fine. And I wasn't averse to going there on my own or anything like that. But it's kind of I kind of felt not there necessarily, but generally, in like trade and training, that you are definitely perceived differently because of your age. But that's a bit of a tangent because really where I was going with this was we did a bit of sweeping in like a twin wall chimney. And I just kind of did it and I thought, like, why am I doing this? This is just a bit silly. And I mean, I was 17 and I'd barely swept the chimney previous to that. Like, if anything, I'd probably just been pulling rods down chimneys because that's kind of where I started before I was pushing them up. I kind of thought, like, what am I getting out of this? And I still kind of think that's the case. I mean, maybe you do feel like you're getting something out of it when you're doing it, because you have no idea really what the job is. But as soon as you have some sort of experience of what the job is and what it really feels like and what you need to do, like that kind of, you kind of can see that for what it is, which is just, I mean, I've used this analogy before, but I kind of feel like you could take someone in your back garden with a few rods and a couple of drain pipes and say, poke these rods through the drain pipes. You'd have the same sort of experience from that. And I know a lot of people don't agree with that, and that's fine. But that's kind of where I came at the Apex stuff from. Because I knew there was nothing I could do to make it perfect. There was nothing I could do to make it like near what I thought was adequate. But I kind of felt like I had to do the best possible with what was available and like the perceived market cap on the expense and the value. Because obviously you've got wages to pay you've got things to pay for. If you're giving someone a certain amount of training, which with the Apex stuff, I think it totals at 8 days, like someone's got to pay for that. And so you get to a certain point where there's no more you can do without charging a lot more money. And then you're in a position where it's not viable. So I kind of feel like you have to start somewhere. And this is kind of where we've started.
I mean, you talk about experience, and that's what you've tried to do. You've tried to marry the technical, the theory element with experience. It sounds from what you're saying that you would much rather there be more practical experience. Maybe, you know, I don't know, a month. Maybe 2 months. That's if you were being a complete purist about it, that's probably where you'd be headed, isn't it?
The only real comparison I have is like when people have actually worked for me. If someone was working for me, I wouldn't allow them or feel confident enough to allow them in someone's house under my name if they'd had a month's training, 2 months training. Or even done an association training course. I mean, it's different when you work for yourself, I guess, because I mean the consequences are on you. So I mean, I think people have more trust in themselves than they do in other people. But no, I mean, it could be as long as you want it to be, really. It depends what the level is. And at the moment there is no level. There's no level set to say what you have to be or what is the minimum standard that someone should reach. There isn't anything really in place. I mean, there's the MVQ, but at the moment that's like, there's nothing in place, or there's no real likelihood of anything being in place where that's going to be an end result of a training course. It's just going to be too expensive. People are going to have to spend too much time. Cause I mean, like, people coming into this trade aren't kids. I mean, they're not doing it in college. They're people that have had, generally people have had other jobs and have still got bills to pay. There's some, in some cases they've been made redundant, but that doesn't mean they've got months and months and months to train to do a job where they're not getting paid. Or if they are getting paid by someone who's putting them through this course, not getting paid very much. So it's kind of almost unrealistic. So we're kind of in this position where the training as it is isn't good enough. But there's no real way of making it good enough, almost.
I mean, I know yourself and our company, we've taken people on and basically they've shadowed, they've worked on the job, they've acquired an amount of knowledge and then either gone to do the job or gone on a training course and then gone to do the job. To my mind, that sounds like what you think would be the best way to do it.
Well, I mean, to be honest, depending on who's training them, I don't think there's necessarily a need for the training course if the person who's training them has the knowledge. I think training courses are a good thing to fill, like, knowledge gaps. Because, I mean, like, obviously just because someone's employing someone doesn't mean they're going to know everything. And not everyone needs to know everything, of course. Like, you don't need to know every piece of information. Like, you need to know where to find it if you need it, but you don't need to know everything. But I think it's good for filling a gap if there are areas that you think someone needs to improve in, like, theoretically. But if you're employing someone, I think if you're good at your job, that kind of informal arrangement can by itself be sufficient. I think some people like the classroom because, well, it depends on the employee, because I know some people can find it frustrating with employees, like them not retaining information, like telling them things and having to tell them again. It's probably quite nice to give that responsibility to someone else. But I don't think in all cases it's necessary. Like, there's someone that works for me who's never been on a training course, hasn't done any sweep training at all other than, like, with me and my dad. And, like, looking back, did I gain anything from doing the next course? No. But I did do it, and that was purely because you had to do it to become a member. And I think that's pretty much why people in a lot of cases do training, especially those of employees. I think it's not so much because they need it, it's because that's a route to become a member of one of the associations, probably.
So why does training and the subject of training, why does it vex so many chimney sweeps?
I don't know why it vexes so many. I mean, it's difficult for a lot of people to not feel kind of put out, I guess, especially the people that have been with the associations for a long time. Because you kind of, like, the thing is that, like, associations change their roles, like, without really consulting members. When I did the next course, you weren't even allowed to do the course unless you had experience. It was like you couldn't just turn up and say, I want to do this course, let me pay you 1500, 1800 quid or whatever it is, I want to come on it and do it. Just didn't work like that. And people were paying into these systems, like, not just NACS, like the Guild. I don't know when the Guild was formed, like 90s, I guess, early 90s. But from what has been explained to me, it was the same sort of situation, where they just changed from an association, like support for their members, like a professional development for their members. That kind of role changed to kind of training organizations. It's like training organization who, once you've been trained, represents you rather than an association that represents professional chimney sweeps. That's kind of how it seemed to change to me. And like, you're going to have a different opinion on that sort of thing if you were there before compared to if you were there afterwards, because you'd be a bit hypocritical if you came in after that sort of that serious change and were critical of it, because I mean, you're here because of that.
Well, that does happen.
Yeah, it does. It does. I mean, I can't really, I don't know why. I mean, like that's not really, I've got no idea. It's a funny one. But yeah, I mean, this, like, it just, like, when you consider like the numbers, I mean, not just financially, but like chimney sweeps used to know each other, and you'd know your competitors. Like, we had a guy near us called Terry Palmer, and when I was a kid, I knew who he was. When like the first 3-4 years I was sweeping, I knew who he was. He used to drive past and stop and walk in and chat to us when we were working in someone's house. And literally, it was the point where my granddad would go on holiday and his answer phone message would be, call Terry Palmer because I'm not available. And Terry Palmer would go on holiday and it'd be, call Firkins because we're not available. And it was like a nice relationship. And it wasn't really a monopoly, because people did pop up and people disappeared. Some chimney sweeps were good, some weren't, some charged certain, but kind of all kind of figured itself out. And it was like, the world was a bit different then as well, because like things were kind of, I guess, more local than they are now with like Google Ads and things like that. Because like, we used to advertise in the Thompson Local, and I don't know how much it was per year, but I mean, it was a lot, even by today's standards for advertising. It was a lot of money. So you wouldn't be in every single one. You wouldn't start advertising like in the next county. You'd like work on your patch, and that was your patch, and that's where you worked. And that's kind of, it's kind of different now. So like, relationships have kind of broken down, I think. Like, not relationships that were there already, but the relationships you'd have. Not in all cases, obviously, but there's just not, there are lots of people who appear and don't appear, and lots of people that work in your area that aren't from your area. So you don't really know who they are, because they might be from like 40, 50 miles away. You don't have any sort of relationship in a lot of cases. And if you do have a relationship, it's a bad one. So like, I think that's why one of the things with the Apex training is that there's a practical element where before the course, you go out of a chimney sweep just for like a day to have a look, see what's going on. And then after the theory training course, you go out again for 4 days, ideally with a couple, to have practical training. And I kind of, my ideal scenario for that is that you go with someone as local to you as possible, because you've got two options really. And one of the options is an option as a trainer, like as a person local to this new chimney sweep, one option is you don't help them because they're close to you and you don't want them to tread on your toes. And the other option is you do. And like, the outcome, whether you do or you don't, in the long run, is going to be the same, because the outcome is that they're going to be there and they're going to be working and they're going to be cleaning chimneys. And there's not an awful lot that can be done about that. But as well as that, there can be an outcome in terms of your relationship with that person. And your relationship with that person can be a good one, because you spent a couple of days together. You form a decent relationship, hopefully. I mean, you're not going to get on with everyone, but in a lot of cases, hopefully you do. Or you don't. And I think if you do, like, it can be beneficial to you in more ways than just socially. I mean, like, this isn't really my social life. Like, I'm not, like, chimney sweeping isn't my, it's a big part of my life because it's my job, but it's not my social life. But I mean, I've had a couple of guys out with me, and I did a course for Apex in Devon. And there's a man on it. And he lives, I guess, a mile and a half away from my house, which is 150 miles away from Devon. And we ended up on the same course. I was training the course. But so there's a couple of ways I could have dealt with that. And one is a bit put out. Like, I'm doing a training course in Devon, and here this bloke is, and he's kind of turned up and he's on my course. Like, what? But he came out of me before the course, in fact, for his like pre-training observation day. And then we got on well and came on the course. We got on well, and he had a couple of days of me after the course. We got on well. He's sent me jobs. I've got him to do a couple of jobs for me. We've met out for a drink. It's good. Like, so, like, what I could have done is been a bit funny about it, never spoken to him, never got a few jobs from him, never got him to do a couple for me. And I don't see how that would actually have made any difference to my business in any positive way.
I know when, because I've obviously, I do, I take trainees out, and you get trainees who might be like, 5-10 miles away from me, and they're like, are you sure it's all right? And I'm like, yeah, of course it's all right. Well, I'm close to you. Well, you know, so what? You know, at the end of the day, it's one of those where you, like you say, they're going to be there. It's a free world. It's a free market, and quite frankly, it's better to be cordial and friendly and professional with people rather than be the exact opposite, because, well, at the end of the day, we're all you never know when you're going to need that person. You never know when you might need to call on help, and what, you know, what goes around comes around. I mean, we obviously talked about training, we talked about associations. You're heavily involved in the MVQ. You're an assassin for the MVQ as well. How does that fit into everything?
In what respect? Like, to what bit?
To the overall training bit, because it's not exactly training as such, but it's part of the whole sweeping, obviously, qualification, professionalization of the industry. Where do you see it sitting among all that?
Well, without being involved in the MVQ, I wouldn't have been able to write the training for Apex, because it's heavily based not on the MVQ, but on the practice and the knowledge, as part of that, people were being assessed on. So I didn't like manage off my own back to write a training course. It was because of other things, like other influences from other people involved in the MVQ. Like, that's where it came from, really. Not necessarily directly, but without that. Without other people's work in sort of, I can't really think what the word is, but that kind of, from the National Occupational Standards, which is basically what the MVQ is based on, without interpreting that in such a way and finding a way to assess people based on all that, I wouldn't have been able to do the course, because that was someone else's work. And I didn't plagiarize it, but I used that in the kind of methodology of the whole thing, like the process, like the assessment process, like the theory, the professional discussion part of the MVQ, kind of the process that I was going through in that interview, like talking about different aspects of the job in a certain order, that kind of influenced very much how I went about doing the training. And I didn't really realize it at the time, I don't think, but on reflection, that's kind of what happened. So it kind of fits in that respect, in that the training for Apex is the MVQ. Like, in that, the stuff that I'm training is stuff that I feel or I have seen kind of fits into it just fits into the MVQ, really. Like, the stuff that's being assessed, like the occupational standards.
Do you think the MVQ is something which eventually customers will want sweeps to have? Because my own view is, I would be surprised, because even in trades where, and bear in mind I've got the MVQ, even in trades where the MVQ is a requirement or a large part of the requirement to, in order to get the registration that they need, it's not the first thing customers ask for. I don't ask for a plaster if he's got an MVQ.
No, I don't think it's going to be that specific thing that the customer asks for, but like you don't ask a gas engineer if he's got the MVQ, and he might not have the MVQ, but he has an equivalent, like the ACS, like level 3. So I have some sort of equivalent, and that's not really, they've not really got that for, like, to give the customer any sort of reason to employ that person. It's just that kind of qualification, that thing they have is the yardstick they have to meet to be able to call themselves that thing. Like, so you can't be a gas engineer if you don't have this MVQ level 3 or equivalent, and you can't be whatever other trade if you don't have that. So I don't think the way it would go, I mean, I don't know what way it's going to go or if it's going to go anyway, but I don't think the way it would go would be the customer requests it. I think the way, if it were to go a way I'd like, would be a way that's just what you have to have. And it's not something the customer has to worry about. It's just the fact that's what you have to have demonstrated in the first place that you know enough, you're good enough at your job. You've achieved that, so you can go and do this aspect of your job. I think, I mean, that's probably pie in the sky, given what we've already talked about and the likelihood of more stringent training and everything. But I, like, as a preference, that would be my preference. So no, I don't think, I'd like, to be honest, in my experience, customers don't care about any of it. They don't care if you've got an MVQ, don't care if you're a member of this association, that association, HETAS. The only time they do occasionally care, which in my case is very, very, very occasionally, is when someone else has told them to care. Like, it might be an insurance company has said, you should choose this person, or they've read something on the internet which has said, you should choose this person. So I don't think customers really care. I think customers base it more on probably reviews they've read on the internet, which like association membership or competent person scheme membership has no real bearing. I think it's what their friends say, a name they recognise. I think it's loads of things more than that. So no, I don't think MVQ will be anything customers look for in particular, and I don't think anything else really will be, and unless it's, well, no, I just don't think it will, even no matter what, really.
But should there be a standard which a customer says, a customer knows that if they've got this accreditation, this qualification, whatever it happens to be, then I'm okay to book this person. In the same way, talking about gas, you know that if you want someone to work on a gas appliance, they need to be gas safe registered. Do you think it's desirable or even practical for that to be the case for sweeps?
I think it's very, very desirable, but I think if you're going to try and achieve that, it would probably turn into something that is still a level lower than it should be. Because I don't think it would be a qualification that was like made this sort of requirement, really. I don't know, just a hunch. But I think if it was going to be anything, it'd be something else. And I can't see anywhere at the moment in the industry where any organization has the inclination to increase standards enough that would be the case. I mean, it probably, if anything, like, again, this is just my opinion, probably be like a watered down version of something. Like, what that something is, I've got no idea. But I don't think, no, I think I would like it to be true, but I don't think it will be.
Do you enjoy the training aspect of it?
Yeah. I mean, it can be difficult. It can be really difficult. I kind of enjoy the writing it, really. I kind of get myself down a bit of a rabbit hole sometimes, and I'm sort of research. I mean, you kind of like end up researching like lots of different things for what turns out to be like 4 minutes of content. Like, you spend hours and hours on something, like for like a chimney lining or lining types course I did, like, I spent hours and hours and hours, like literally tens of hours learning about the history of different chimney systems for an intro on each type of chimney system that was like 5 minutes. And I enjoyed it, actually. I was looking through like 50, 60, 70-year-old magazines, contacting people, talking to people that have been in the trade for a long time, talking to the kids of people that were in the trade. And it was really interesting.
What was the most fascinating thing you learned from doing all that research?
Like, this isn't fascinating, really, but I kind of found it fascinating. Have you heard of an MA adapter?
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you know what it means?
No.
No one does. Apart from one person who told me what it means. And it's that, really. I kind of thought, what? Because I remember years ago thinking, I can't remember what line of magazine I had. But it's probably Spec Flu, because I think they were the first people to try and flog me a liner. And it was an MA adapter. I thought, what does that stand for? And I'm trying to work it out in my head, like, like, what, because of an M? Like nothing.
Multi.
Well, you're close, funnily enough. But then I was like, I was just chatting to people. And there's a chimney person in, there's all sorts of stories, and I'm not going to talk to them now because they take ages. And I'd probably get in loads of trouble.
And they're on your course as well. So
I want to save a bit of it. I'm a bit upset I'm even sharing the MA. But yeah, no, there was a guy I was talking to. It's funny, just a chimney installer in, it's just outside of London. And he actually was given my details by another chimney sweep. So another reason why probably you should keep some relationships with local sweeps, because they send you stuff and work. But he was given my details by another chimney sweep. And just by chance, we were kind of chatting about something, and I'm going to be a bit of a tangent, but we were talking about something or other, and there was a name he recognised, which was Keddie, like not Keddie, the Swedish stove manufacturer, but there was like a chimney manufacturer called Keddie, like K-E-D-D-Y. No, sorry, K-E-triple-D-Y. He mentioned his dad was involved in that. So I was like, I have a book, and I'm sure there's loads of pictures of guys that were involved with that company in my old chimney book. And anyway, it turned out his dad wasn't in it, but he was, as like a, I don't know, he must have been about 17, 20 maybe. And now he's like 50s, 60s. And he'd never seen it, didn't even know it was in the book. But anyway, we were chatting. We were talking about his dad, who was heavily involved in the trade. I can't remember which one, but something to do with SIA or BFCMA, like in one of their earlier forms. Then he mentioned someone else to me who his dad knew, which happened to be the dad of Adam Pedersen at Rod Station. And I didn't really have any idea that Adam Pedersen was like anything to do with chimneys other than just a bloke who'd been making some rods. I had no idea, because he's not really the sort of bloke that's going to boast about this sort of thing. He's like a nice bloke, Adam Pedersen, but he doesn't give much away, really. Like, you don't, not that you expect him, you don't really hear much from him about himself or where he's come from or why he's doing this. But it turned out that Adam Pedersen's dad was the person that started bringing flexible chimney liners into the UK. I won't go too much into it because it's in the course, but there were flexible liners that came like quite a long time ago, like around the time that Copex did in the 50s. But he started bringing in like a brand of chimney liner that they saw at a trade show somewhere. I think it was in France, might have been Belgium, he said. I can't really remember. But he just mentioned that his dad started importing this liner, and they still sell it, called Multiflex. And MA just means multiflex adapter. That's it.
Right.
It's just that. And I kind of thought, like, I don't know. I couldn't go so far as to say I was blown away, because it suggests I've got quite a boring life. But but I was just like, whoa, that's actually really interesting. Like, not because...
Why has no one ever asked that question? I mean,
I don't know.
I've never even considered asking it myself.
Well, this is what I mean. When you find yourself, because there's other stuff. There's lots of other stuff, like just how people got involved years ago in certain trades, how different liner manufacturers ended up in the UK. There's so much interesting stuff that I don't want to tell the stories about because it's too interesting. And
you got a course to sell.
Yeah, people have got to pay for that information. but yeah, you think, like, No, I can't imagine many people knew that. But yeah, I just found it really interesting. I just thought, well, that's really cool. That I mean, it's sad, you know, it is quite sad. But no, I just yeah, MA, like, it's still here. No particular reason other than the fact that they thought, what should we call this little device? Adapter, multiflex adapter, why not? And yeah, it's stuck.
I'd have taken a stab at multi-fuel adapter.
You would have been wrong then, wouldn't you?
Yeah, well, only a little bit.
Still wrong. You're either right or you're wrong.
Certainly, would never heard of multiflex. I mean, that little story is indicative because you know, it is a job to you. It's not your life, but you do have a passion for it. There's no getting away from that. Where do you see the industry being in, let's say, 10 years?
I don't know. I'm both a positive and a negative person at the same time, because I'm kind of miserable actually. Like that's what everyone thinks anyway. But no, I kind of feel like positively about a lot of things. Like I don't really worry about stuff. I'm not a worrier. I always have this sort of attitude of like, it's going to be all right. It's going to figure itself out. And that's pretty much about everything in my life. And that's kind of quite a powerful thing, really, because you never anything does. Nothing ever kind of worries you when you feel like that, because you kind of think, whatever the situation is, I'm going to figure it out, or it's going to figure itself out. So it's fine. But on the other hand, I kind of think, like, what if? Because I'm very much a what if sort of asker. Not that that's the right grammar, but I do think what if about a lot of stuff. And that kind of, again, is a good thing, because when you're thinking what if, you think, well, I'm going to do this if this happens, I'm going to do that if that happens. And you're kind of almost prepared for things that aren't going to happen, which in a sense, like has been suggested to me, that's kind of a sort of a form of anxiety or something, but I don't believe in that sort of thing. So we'll move on from that. But yeah, I don't know, but I strongly suspect we'll be in the same position as we are now. Just everything's carry on as normal. And you're probably sat there thinking, oh, rubber, in 10 years time, the industry might be on its knees, or there might be no more chimneys to sweep and everything's been banned. And then 10 years after that, you'll probably be in the same position as you are now. Mm. Eventually something's going to happen, because something always happens. Like nothing lasts forever. No job lasts forever. Like if you go back 500 years, what jobs were around then that are now? Probably not many. I mean, farmers. What else? It's just things change and things move on, and eventually this job will move on, it will change, and it won't be here, and eventually all the houses that have got chimneys won't be there anymore. I mean, it's obviously going to happen eventually. Mm. Like whether that's 100 years, 500 years, I mean, who knows? But my suspicion is it's not going anywhere. If it does, it won't be in every sense, because for the foreseeable future, at least, you're going to need chimneys for some stuff. And even if you don't need chimneys for some stuff, you're still stuck with chimneys. Mm. They're still in houses. There are still people that have got problems with chimneys. And when there are people that have got problems, they want someone who specializes in that particular area. And I kind of feel like if that were to happen, say they banned stoves tomorrow, I think I'd still be cleaning chimneys if there were no stoves. No open fires. I think I'd still be cleaning them. I'd probably charge a lot more money for it, because it'd be more specialised. Mm. And a load of people would drop out of the industry, but I'd still be around. Even if I'm like scratching for a few quid here and there, I'd still probably be doing it. I might be doing something else at the same time to pay the bills, like pushing trolleys in Tesco, but I'd still be doing it. It just might not be as profitable as it is now. Or having said that, maybe it'll be more profitable. Who knows? But no, I think we'll be fine, probably. But who knows? So everyone needs a contingency plan. So I don't really know what mine is yet, but I'm going to get one.
Yeah, I must admit, I'm a similar thing. I think the one of the important things when you run a business is it was described to me as the ability to see around corners, to see what's obviously coming next. My own view is similar. I can't see anything. There's not going to be a big bang. Change will usually happens incrementally. When you talk about that kind of change, and I again, you know, this time of year, particularly in the spring summertime, the amount of chimneys that you sweep which aren't connected to anything just great big massive holes in the, you know, living rooms, dining rooms, etc. There's plenty. I think I swept. I had 2 days a few weeks ago where I didn't have one appliance connected to any of them. They were bedroom openings, you know, just kit, people putting new kitchens in and stuff like that. And like you say, we've got literally hundreds of years of legacy flues, which are still there and still decaying. One final question about training. Where would you like to see it go? Ideally, would you prefer the associations to focus more on giving people hands-on experience, or would you prefer them to stop training altogether? Because quite frankly, you know, the argument could be that they are there to represent members, and generally quite a few members wouldn't like the idea of them training their competition.
Quickly going to go back to your last point, if you don't mind, mm-hmm. about all the chimneys you've swept that weren't connected to appliances, just because I think it's actually an important thing to remember, because this is one of the reasons why, you know, you were talking earlier about how, I can't remember how you put it, but some sort of like a suggestion of potential regulation. Mm-hmm. That's kind of one of the reasons I think that's really difficult, because at the moment, the option that people would think is most likely is HEETS, I would suspect, or from what I hear, that's what they think is the most likely. But like HEETS are solid fuel, like chimneys in the UK, if you added up every chimney in the UK and then worked out what sort of appliance they have, if any, the vast majority are not going to have an appliance. Mm-hmm. So this, like, we're not in the solid fuel industry. We work with solid fuel. We're in a chimney industry. Like, it's not solid fuel. We work on oil. We work on gas, chimneys that serve gas fires. And most importantly, disused. They're not, we can service and maintain stuff, but like, we work with chimneys, and that's not fuel specific. So you can't have like a regulation or a regulator.
Because you've done coffee roasters and.
Yeah, like it's just not something that, like, that's just too narrow. Like what is, like, if you've got an organization that is a solid fuel based organization, or like Offtech is an alternative, like oil predominantly, what do they know about disused chimneys? Like, that's just a complete, they wouldn't have a clue. Like, they wouldn't know about construction locally. They wouldn't know about common problems. I mean, that's what chimney sweeps deal with. Like, that's where you need the experience. It's like knowing about construction of the properties locally to you and the problems. I mean, like, people used to ring my granddad and ask questions about chimneys, and they'd be like, oh, well, the thing is about that road is it was bombed. And so that chimney, like, in that house is going to have been rebuilt in whatever year. And like, that people don't, like, that's not knowledge that you just get from a couple of days in the training course or from being regulated by an organization that is specific to a certain fuel. That's just a silly idea to start with. I mean, it just doesn't make any sense.
And architects and builders wouldn't have that knowledge whatsoever.
An architect doesn't even know what a chimney is most of the time. So like, the only people that are going to know about them are chimney sweeps, really. And I mean, you get installers that do, but the problem with installations is like, they've had the same problem of chimney sweeps that chimney sweeps have, because like, suddenly the last 15 years, like, the amount has kind of, I don't know, there's more installers than there are sweeps, and there's loads of sweeps. But anyway, I forgot what your question was about training, where it's going to go.
Yeah. Would you rather, there be a different type of training, more experience based, or do you think the association should regress from training altogether? Because obviously they are primarily a membership organization.
So what I think they should do is focus on their members. I don't know. I've got no idea how many members different associations have got, but it's hundreds and hundreds. Like, if you add up like the three, I feel a bit guilty about saying the three main associations, like, say the three most well-known associations are Apex, Guild and NACS. Do they have knocking on 1,000 members? I'd like to think so. I don't know.
I'm fairly certain that put together then, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, most of them in the Guild and NACS, to be fair. But yeah, like, concentrate on them. And when I say concentrate on them, I mean improve them. I mean, people have got to be willing to improve.
But doesn't this create a closed shop?
No, because I hadn't finished my point. So the way you get around the closed shop is you support your members in their attempts at growing their business. Because, I mean, like, it's not in the interest of association at the moment to grow for their members to grow businesses unless they're becoming members of these associations or they're going on the training courses. If you support your members in training, like improving themselves, not necessarily in just their chimney sweeping knowledge, though that would be important. You do a lot about chimney sweeping and professional development in that respect, but other things like running your business, and like, you kind of need to have some sort of idea of running the business if you're going to expand. And if you support your members like that, they're in a position where they can expand. And naturally what happens is, when you expand a business, you take on employees. And then naturally what happens is employees leave. And naturally what happens is they start businesses. And like, that might be a scary prospect, but that is growth. That's not a closed shop. That's supporting your members. I mean, it's not a closed shop because people still get to go and start. Someone could still start up on their own, buy a load of equipment on the internet or from, I don't know, RPS or whatever. Or anyone else, and just start up and just practice on their own fireplace. I mean, it's not closed because there's no regulation. But you do that, if you support those businesses in growing, it's naturally going to, not every employee in all of these businesses is going to stay forever. They're going to go and start on their own, because that's what happens in other trades. Like, people do apprenticeships with a business. Like, you don't become an electrician and just think, oh, I know, I fancy doing this. You have to go and learn from someone. And in more often than not, you learn on the job with someone else. And after a certain amount of time, they either look after you and you want to work with them and you want to stay with them because they're a good person and they pay you what you want to be paid, or you think, I'd rather go and work for myself.
But the associations, they do that. They allow you to make links with people who can give you, if you can give you that experience. So,
how, in what respect?
Well, the shadowing days, you know, you say electricians, you need to go and shadow someone. The associations, they give you that network to tap into.
And like I said, at the moment, like, I don't want to get too much into what other associations do. But Apex, like, so it's 5 days, but that's 5 days. You don't go and become an electrician in 5 days. There's shadowing and getting taught in a, I mean, it's not the same thing. You're like, you need longer than that. And I mean, still, it's not the same, I don't think. I think associations don't need to train. They don't have to. They might have to for their own business interests. But to allow growth in the industry and for the industry to keep going, they don't need to. Because when you think, how many businesses would have expanded if the amount of business they had allowed them to. I mean, like, how many, do you think everyone would want to be fully booked every single day of the year and been working 5 days a week in the summer and the spring? I mean, because that's what it was once. And people did expand their businesses, and there are more chimneys clean now than there were 25 years ago. So it's a much bigger industry, but businesses, if they're supported, can expand. And that's not to say that associations don't give people on their training courses some sort of experience, but it's nowhere near as good as if businesses expanded, because the training you are going to give someone who's going to go out and do work on your behalf is going to exceed the training that someone is going to give you when they're just giving you training for you to join their association.
But that's happening now anyway, because, you know, you're in training, so you know this, and I've heard it obviously from yourself, but also anecdotally from others, that there's more employees now going on training courses than newbies.
Yeah, well, I mean, so I don't know as if that's the same with every association. I think maybe more some than others, but that just kind of, in my opinion, proves my point. Like they're doing it now in spite of the associations, not because of them, not with the help of them. They're doing it because they're seeing a need and they're fulfilling that need.
But those owners will have had to start somewhere. I mean, I'll take myself as a classic example. If I hadn't have been able to access that support and training, then I wouldn't be able to send my employees on courses.
Maybe not, but then maybe someone else would have set up around here who was working for someone else. I mean, like, the thing is, we can't just say because this didn't happen then, it doesn't happen now. Because, I mean, it wasn't happening this way when you started. So, I mean, if it were, and say the guild, when they trained you, were instead looking after their current members and saying, how can we support you? How can we help you grow your business? What professional courses can we send you on so that you understand business better, so you understand the risks, you understand how to mitigate those risks? Maybe they wouldn't have needed to train someone new in your case, because another local company would have thought, actually, I can do this. I've got some doubt, but now I understand how to expand, and I will. And they'd take someone on, they'd train that person. But I mean, it didn't. And just because it didn't then doesn't mean it shouldn't now and it shouldn't ever.
But do you not think, Pete, I mean, that sounds a little bit idealistic in a way, because people want to expand their businesses will expand them regardless of what their trade organization does or doesn't do. That those kind of people are self-starters. They will find that they don't. It's very, very few people will only do it because they've been given the idea by their association. Or am I wrong?
I mean, there's certain people that are going to do it, obviously. But I mean, it's not so much. No, I don't really agree. I think I just think if people are given an opportunity, I mean, people are worried about this sort of thing. They don't want to take risks. They've got families to feed, and people naturally, in a lot of cases, see the negatives in something and just don't bother. But no, I think it's difficult. I mean, like, the thing is, like, I don't know I'm right and you don't know you're right, because it's never been a situation like associations for a long time haven't been in a position where their members are first. Mm-hmm. So how do we know? I mean, it's just all. It's just my opinion on what I think would be, because at the moment, like, what does an association give you other than a backlink?
Is that a question to me?
Just a question to everyone. Like, what? I mean, like, what is, no, like, serious, like, I mean, like, you can think of it as a social thing. Like, it's like a club in some respects, in some cases. But at the moment, you're not getting much back, are you? I mean, maybe you get a couple of jobs a year. I mean, I'm sure there are people that say they get loads and loads of jobs, but I mean, do they or don't they? I don't know. But it's not necessarily a fantastic return on investment. So that's why I think, like, associations are missing a trick, which is why I had set up that training company. Wasn't really because I thought I was the best person to do it. It's because they're not bothering. Like, no one else is doing it. So probably someone should. And I thought, maybe if I do it, and things got in the way for a little while, but I'll come back to it. But I thought, if I do, maybe that'll like give them some impetus to do something as well. But at the moment, like, they're missing the trick, because there are lots of people that want to learn stuff. There are lots of people that want to develop, and they're not given the opportunity to, because the organization they're paying to represent them and train them isn't training them. They're just training new people. And that's not your role. I mean, train people if you want. Train people if you think that's the best thing to do. But how can any association actually look at themselves and say, the best thing for our members is only to train other people and not to train our own members in any real way? There are the odd courses here and there that are a bit silly, really. But they don't, any of them, actually put the members first. The thing they concentrate advertising budgets on is getting people in to train you. It's not to look after their own members and train them. And I don't think any of them could deny that.
I mean, to play devil's advocate, if that's the case, why are you training with
Apex? Yeah. Because, well, first of all, I was asked. Like, hands up, we had a vote at Apex when I first started. They asked me to do the training because they thought it had to be rewritten. Don't know why they asked me, really. I can't remember. Must have been clutching at straws, I suppose. But we had a vote on the steering committee. Should we carry on training or should we stop? I voted to stop. I voted not to do any more training for new chimney sweeps. because that's my preference. I don't think we need to do it. I mean, I might be proven wrong, and maybe we would have stopped, and then we would have got to a point where kind of thing, actually, like members are declining, it's not doing our organisation any good, et cetera, but, I do it because I've always said it's not good enough. And you've got two choices when you say something isn't good enough. You just say it's not good enough and you don't have an alternative, or you say it's not good enough and you say, I'm going to do it better. And that's the drive, is not because I want to do it or because I'm going to earn any money out of it. Because frankly, I mean, go and work for Apex. I don't pay you very much, though I love it. So thank you, Peter Harris. just a joke. It's not financial, because it can't be. I mean, I'm sure some training providers pay more than others, but that's not what it is. What it is that I looked at all the others and openly said it's not good enough. And so if you're going to say that, do something about it. If something isn't good enough, don't just sit there moaning, like, because what are you? You're just a little moaner, aren't you? You're just moaning about stuff. You're just miserable. I mean, if you're going to moan about it, do something. Mm-hmm. And if you have the opportunity to do something, then do it. And if you think something is going to make something better, then do it. And if you think it's going to be for the best, then make an effort, because you're like alive once, you know. And if you care about something, you want to improve it. And I do. And I am well aware that it's not perfect. And I can say with oversight, on every single time we do an Apex course, something changes, because I think as soon as something is stagnant, it just gets worse. Like, if it stays the same, it gets worse. So things have to evolve, and at the moment it evolves, and sometimes I figure out some little things don't work very well and I change them. And that's just the way it's going. I mean, I'm doing it because I want it to be better, and I still want it to be better. But as far as I'm concerned, there's a ceiling where it's not going to be able to improve, because the amount of money it would cost means that it's not going to be taken up. Because, I mean, like, to be honest, I think from before it was rewritten to now, the price of it went up, I don't know, like 130% or something, I think, which is a jump. If you put your sweeping price up that much, you'd be in some serious trouble. I think associations should concentrate more on training their members than new chimney sweeps. Do both if you want, but if you invest X amount of money training new ones and X amount of money training new ones, invest the same in your current members. Give them the opportunities.
So just to be clear, you do not think that associations should train new chimney sweeps?
I'm kind of in that sort of, the thing is, like, can I kind of am of a opinion that almost when you start delving into this sort of thing, people almost can't be trusted. Like, you just, if you say yes, like, as in my opinion was the case, like, the floodgates opened, like, because that's a lot of money coming through the door. So for an association that is not generating much money through membership, like, so you've got a member of an association, they're paying you £250 a year, or you've got a new trainee who's going to pump in like £1,800 into your association. So like, one new sweep is worth a good few years of an old one. It's almost like the whole like Sky, like, new customers can get 50% off, old ones don't really care about you, you're already here, you're stuck. Like, you know, it's I mean, possibly quite controversial, but that is my opinion, and I don't think that's an opinion many people didn't know I had. Yeah.
Well, you talked about Sky. I think this interview's been box office. I've really, really enjoyed our conversation, Josh. I think it's great to have a good chat with someone in the industry who is clearly, you know, really passionate about making it a better industry, not afraid to share their opinions and have a good exploration of those opinions. So, Josh, thanks very much for taking the time to be with us this week.
like I would say, if you've enjoyed this podcast, give us a like and a subscribe on Facebook, on Amazon, on Spotify, wherever you listen to this podcast. If you've listened to Josh's opinions and you agree with them, if you disagree with them, whatever you think, hit the comments button on social media and let us know. Like I always say, it's always great to have your feedback as well via email. My email address is david@trade-entrepreneur.co.uk. Thank you very much again for joining us. Thank you very much to Josh Firkins for spending the time chatting to us this week. Have a great week, everyone, and please take care, and we'll see you all again very soon.